and hooked a ground wire to a machine that I was testifying produced more energy than it put into it.
Didn't work because the NBS testers grounded his machine, despite the fact that his schematics specifically showed the machine was not to be grounded. Transcripts of court hearings bear Newman out.
They had been sent specific directions, and even between the correspondents among themselves, they admitted it was not to be grounded. A ground wire has only one function, and that is to dump excess energy. A ground wire has no other function. Yet they took and hooked a ground wire to a machine that I was testifying produced more energy than it put into it. They knew it was going to dump that energy.
While Newman's energy machine still has numerous supporters, it is clearly opposed by the U.S. Patent Office. And without a patent, Newman can't attract investors. Is it because of a conspiracy between government and the big oil interests, as Newman alleges, or a case of another citizen tangled up in bureaucratic red tape? A patent insider offers yet another possibility.
The first person who pioneers any new field usually experiences more resistance than those who follow. And certainly he's received the most raw deal because it's taken him decades to fight 3 appeal cases and testings, and he's received no compensation or protection for his invention. He's an example and only a tip of the iceberg. There are hundreds of people under him who receive the same raw deal.
Turner, I work for you. Now, listen.
Identify yourself. What is your designation?
Condor. Section 9, Department 17. The section's been hit.
What level?
Level of damage. Everybody. Dr. Lapp, Janice, Ray, Harold. Harold was in the,
You're on a company line.
No, I'm in a phone booth. I'm just a block away. I'm in the street.
You're in violation of secure communication procedures, Condor.
Listen, you son of a bitch. I'm telling you, I came back with lunch and it was raining and the whole house was murdered. Everybody is dead.
Right. Has the incident been discovered by anyone outside the company?
I don't know. I don't think so.
Are you damaged?
Damaged? No.
Are you armed?
I can't remember her code name. Nightingale. She was afraid of being raped. She kept a gun. I've got the gun.
Identify the armament. It's a .45 automatic. You guys bring me in, please. I'm not a field agent. I just read books.
Leave the area.
All right, well, do I come into headquarters now?
Negative. Find a secure location.
Where?
Avoid any place you're known. Do not go home.
Avoid any place you're known.
Do not go home. Do not go
surface
home.
Surface again in 2 hours and call the major.
That'll be 14:30, your time.
Wait a minute. All right, 2:30, right?
Now walk away from the phone. Don't hang it up.
Go home. Surface again in 2 hours and call the major.
Walk away from the phone. Don't hang up.
Number one, because it's presumptuous of me. I don't like to tell people what to do.
Okay.
I ain't tell them what the law says.
Mm-hmm.
When I'm an educator.
Okay.
I'm telling everybody out there that there is no law that says you have to pay income taxes. If anybody can find such a law and sends it to you and you call me up, I'll pay that person $5,000.
We have about 4 minutes left.
Violation of secure communication procedures.
You talked about the Federal Reserve and the IRS and money having no value. Now, the IRS and the Federal Reserve, were they created in the same year?
Yeah, well, that was just coincidental. There's no really tie in there. People like to make a tie.
Okay.
The Federal Reserve is a private banking syndicate, and people, again, get all excited because it's private. But it has to be private because there is no provision in the Constitution that would allow the government to issue note currency. The only power over money that the Constitution gives the federal government is it has to coin money and regulate the value. So the only authority the federal government has is to issue gold and silver coin. Now, since we have no gold and silver coin, all we have is irredeemable paper. All U.S. coin and currency is counterfeit. It's all garbage. And one of these days it's going to be worthless.
Identification. Identify yourself.
So I think there's a lot of ways of reforming the system. We obviously would need a new U.S. Congress to restructure the media in a pluralistic way, but...
Now, in quantum physics, you have this strange and not very commonsensical sort of world where you can have apparently the same particle in two places at once or something like that. Is this a case where it's actually two different universes in some way interacting, interfering?
I'm in a phone booth. I'm in the street.
They're also scared stiff, but let me ask you something about your own technique. How is it that a woman who represents serious scholarship, almost the most monastic and disciplined end of classical scholarship, also trades so much in attack, personal insult, invective, as you do?
Yeah, I'm a satirist, okay? I studied the great tradition of satire. It goes all the way to Marshall, Pope, all right? That's what's behind me. Well, an early figure that inspired me was Dorothy Parker. I loved her one-liners. They went in the middle of the sort of Doris Day 50s, the idea of a sharp, caustic female voice. It really energized me. And then Mary McCarthy. I love Mary McCarthy. I sought out her books in secondhand bookstores and so on. It's been a long time since we had such a caustic female voice. Right? It's a little bit like Katharine Hepburn or Betty Davis. Right? The kind of Yankee independence. I'm kind of Annie Oakley figure, you know, shoot from the hip and so on. Yeah, you rarely get this combination. Actually, it goes back. The monks and the nuns, you know, the nuns of the Middle Ages sometimes had this combination, you know, of a deep learning at the same time a kind of irascible. I mean, Aquinas was apparently a character like this. You know, someone who was like kind of muscular, would go out and get in a fight and so on. Right? Some of the saints had this character. I'm very inspired by the example of Teresa of Avila, you know, someone who was single-handedly reformed the convents in Spain, right?
I, as a scientist, would automatically, if somebody came to me and says, I have a machine that has an efficiency greater than 100%, I would say, impossible. I mean, I'm a scientist. I know that. I know that.
We have a real chance at this new world order, an order in which a credible United Nations can use its peacekeeping role to fulfill the promise and vision of the UN's founders.
You're in violation of secure communication procedures.
In seizing the destinies of other people and using them callously for our own ends. We must name that system, and we must change it and control it, else it will destroy us.
It's just like if you take a certain kind of ham actor or stock actor, if you give them a role they're not comfortable in, everything that's bad about their acting shows.
But what I wanted to illustrate briefly was that none of you knew it, but your beliefs were in full swing in that little process. And what happened was, all of you brought up your protection mechanism because you didn't want to be discovered. You didn't really want to know what was in the other person, you see? Because if you do that, then you might find out what's in yourself.
What a role that they've been playing all their lives that they're good at. And they could be superb. You could even assume for a while that they were a great actor if they're playing the role of their life. And Gilmore's a little bit like that. The better I've gotten to know Gilmore, the more he reminds me of certain movie stars I've known. I don't mean that he has their charisma or that he has their style of life, or I'm not saying the reverse of that, all movie stars are murderers. What I'm saying is that funny relation he bears to his own personality is I've seen only in movie stars.
Just make your rap like a damn good man, an old steer, she'll hoolan, come a tie, hi, fi, come a tie, hi. Well, catch him around the horns and take out the slack, lay that critter right on his back, come a tie, hi, fi, come a tie, and if he breaks his neck, just pull out your knife and we'll have fresh beef for once in her life. Come a tie, hi, fi, come a tie, hi. Well, the Lord would make a darn good hand, for it takes his raps like a Mexican. Come a tie, hi, fi, come a tie, hi.
Yes, one of the great things about the parallel universe's interpretation of quantum theory is that it removes the mystery from quantum mechanics. Instead of having to use double talk, like a particle being in two places at the same time, yet only being in one place, or a particle behaving like a particle and yet simultaneously behaving as a wave, or a particle being localized yet at the same time spread out all over the apparatus. Instead of having to use those that kind of double talk, it's perfectly straightforward what's happening. Different versions of the particle are in different places in different universes. In any one universe, the particle is at a particular place, but in this place is different in different universes. When the different versions, or some of the different versions of the particle, come to the same place in different universes, then they interact with each other strongly and produce the phenomena we call interference phenomena. But in all other ways, the parallel universes barely interact at all.
It's not hard. In the current issue of Fair's magazine, Extra, we have an article by Professor Robert McChesney where he proposes some reforms that he acknowledges aren't even on the agenda in Washington today, but he says, why shouldn't we tax advertisement, perhaps 2% on every TV ad, or 5% on every TV ad, and take that money and it goes to non-commercial public television or public radio? Why shouldn't we take the news divisions and the children's divisions out of the hands of Murdoch and Westinghouse and General Electric, and at every network you let them program entertainment, but when it comes to news and public affairs and kids programming, that should be non-commercial, and it should be funded perhaps by this tax on private commercial TV ads or radio ads. I mean, there's lots of ways of restructuring our media in a way that would breed diversity, and I'm not for a total state-owned media or a total public media, but right now we're like 99% private and 1% public. It would be nice if it was more of a 50-50 mix. On the front.
I guess we're all warmed up now. Do some radio. Mid-Atlantic at this point. Can only see through the periscope. I guess I'll eat my sandwich in the brown paper bag. Get a second wind. Maybe dream of my childhood a little bit. Proceed on to Orly Airport in Paris, where I will be world famous, even though I don't want that. And maybe my child will be kidnapped by Bruno something or other. Or something else, perhaps, here at Newton. It's dark out. Sun went away, may never come back. I have no idea. The WZBC radio network and string of affiliates on the air, with a voice amalgam of the Gary Geiserman sound, so popular in some alternate echo reality, perhaps. Reconstructed for your media entertainment here out of Newton. A reconstructed semi-burb of the Boston, Eastern Massachusetts Bay Hub area. Currently undergoing an economic boom phase, along with the rest of planet Earth, except where you might perhaps reside. But that's a personal matter. We won't go into that. I want to thank a cast of hundreds, perhaps more, for contributing through a slight electromagnetic time pulse delay for their contributions tonight. Putting together the sound puzzle, if you will.
Enormously charming.
Here in the hot summertime time.
Sort of aspects of the book that was conveyed immediately from the title and also from the overall direction of it.
In fact, I do various other shows during the week, but they're not technically online with the broadcast technology media. And your reception would be accordingly. So be definitely in tune for those several times during the week. So sit back and relax. The worst is over. Let the miracles come in. You know what I mean. We're venturing forward into the great water for a while. 90.3 on the radio, the station that in many ways doesn't exist. So I personally am eagerly awaiting the EM floating car, which I am inventing in my mind as we speak. Because my approach to, in fact, my hobby in life, for which, to my mother's regret, I do not receive financial recompense, is to create a world that I like. I don't bother with the old one. And I do that by sitting in my couch in my living room at least once a day. You know what I mean? I already invented the wireless cellular net radio, which I'll be on soon, on my virtual station. That will be given away at Kmart soon for a one-year sign-up of a moderate nature. Like a cell phone now, only a lot cheaper. And on that wireless radio, I can say bad words, have live sex, or even radical ideas on there.
You're in violation of secure communication procedures.
We have a real chance at this new world order.
Avoid any place you're known. Do not go home.
Oh, that is too clear.
Yeah. And there's another one here that I don't know what it means. But let's play it straight after. Sad when they fell.
Sad when they fell.
Sad when they fell.
And that was straight after I've been caught.
Well, now, wait a minute. I might know what that means. Sad, sad when they fell.
Uh-huh.
I think I know what that might mean, David. There are a lot of witnesses to the Roswell incident who indicate that the alien creatures that crashed in the desert there were pathetic. They were dying. And it was a very sad event. And
Oh yes, indeed.
I've talked to a lot of people about exactly that. Sad when they fell. That makes a lot of sense to me.
Second one is a little one called the Giant Renew Aristotle. Childhood is like a kitchen. It's dangerous to the mice, but the husband gets fed. He's an old giant grumbling and smelling children. It's a place where you get smaller and smaller. Or maybe you get larger and larger. In general, you become preoccupied with this old lady in the kitchen. She putters about, opens oven doors. The thing is, the old woman won't discuss anything. The giant will. He's always been a fan of Aristotle. Knew him at school. It's no surprise to him that the Trojan War lasted 10 years, or how it ended. He knows something you don't. Your brother says, "Say, what's that in the oven?"
Or pay a price. Or that just when things start going good, they get bad. Well, that's all a lot of hogwash. And people believe those things because they themselves have a belief system of limitation and lack. They believe at a core level that they don't deserve success and happiness, so why should anyone else? Most people think that happiness comes out of being successful or having good health, when in fact the reverse is true. Happiness is not something that's earned or deserved. Happiness is simply a state of mind by which our thinking is positive a good share of the time.
The main muscle in the New World Order is a group called Bilderberg. It's a secret international organization. Rockefellers, Rothschilds, Henry Kissinger's a driving force. They're a powerful, powerful group of people, and they make decisions behind closed and locked doors that affect the lives of every American, you and me, and many of the people on this earth.
When you hear your co-author talk along these lines and you put on your hardest-headed, analytical hat, do you think that this is a pipe dream? I mean, are we really talking about something that is the slightest chance of really happening?
I think it's going to be very tough, but it is possible in the sense that at the beginning of the 19th century, it was possible to end slavery, even though it was an enormous uphill battle. So I think the smart money would be to say that things will get worse, but it doesn't mean it's going to happen. We can change the future. And one of the things about mass media that I think is so pernicious is that we are encouraged to be passive. We consume news events. We're told to consume history as though it were some kind of Wonder Bread off the shelf. Rather than seeing democracy as something that we participate in, we can shape the future. We don't simply need to coin a new phrase, turn on, tune in, and just have our brains drop out. We need to fight. We need to organize. That's against the media messages we're getting, but it can be done.
Well, let's get one more caller anyway before we have to go away. Francis in New York City, you're on the air.
As an avid listener to the radio for news, I've always listened to it. And what I find now is the over-commercialization has taken my interest away. Unlike Fair, who was very concerned about right and where it's coming from, right or left, that does not concern me. I prefer to have CBS the way it used to be with news bureaus all over the world. I don't want Dan Rather like he did last week to go to Hong Kong. He's an anchorman. We should have the newsman there reporting the news. We do not have it now. And I think that these versions, the newsman there reporting the news, we do not have it now. And I think that these versions, not getting the information, we're getting commercials now. And I think that these versions, not getting the information, we're getting commercials now.
Yeah, I think you raised a good point. I wish I had heard the show last week. I mean, part of it is when you have these kinds of media owners, isn't it obvious that they'd be just as happy if we were a nation of mindless consumers as opposed to a nation of informed, active citizens? So part of the sensationalism and fluff and diversion and O.J. Simpson coverage and Joey Buttafuoco and Tanya Harding and Lorena Bobbitt, and you can go through the litany, part of that is that those are nice, safe stories. Those are stories that keep viewers and listeners and readers basically on the sidelines consuming. And they aren't exactly stories that would involve people. And, hey, I might become an active citizen. Let me get involved. I mean, what are you going to do about Lorena Bobbitt or O.J. Simpson?
Never explain that. He says them. Them? Does that mean two gloves?
I think part of it is that the people feeding us the news and information, given their commercial drives, are basically selling what they hope will be entertainment that won't offend their advertisers, won't get their owners shed in a bad light. And the more they can feed us this diversion and distraction, they're pretty happy. And by the way, when you cover Lorena Bobbitt and Joey Buttafuoco and O.J. Simpson, you can't get sued. But if you do aggressive coverage of the oil industry or the tobacco industry or some of these powerful companies that and industries that deserve more coverage, they'll fight you.
But, you know, the thing is, let me ask you this. You know, there is some good journalism in the mainstream media. There's some tough journalism out there, too. But there's also this Geraldo and
doors that affect the lives of every American, you and me, and many of the people on this earth.
There's this trivialization as much as anything else, it seems to me, is one of the most pernicious aspects of this whole problem that we've been talking about. It's not a matter even of politics. It's a matter of distraction.
Well, you know, that kind of stuff, the Jenny Jones, Geraldo stuff, is a natural, logical outgrowth of the laissez-faire, let them do what they want if they're a corporation philosophy. And it's ironic when the right wing or the center or whoever complains about the smut on the airwaves. Well, if you believe that corporations should be able to hijack the airwaves and do whatever they want to make a profit, then this is the kind of stuff you're going
to
get.
Well, but neither do I think, and most people I think don't think, that people ought to be able to, or the government should be able to say, do this, do that, and we don't want you to put this on the air.
Well, we're rarely reminded in the mass media that the airwaves are supposed to belong to the public. They're not simply something that is to be handed over to corporations, and yet that's largely what's taken place.
Yeah, there's no rule that says Westinghouse would be the biggest radio company in our country's history. They control dozens and dozens of stations across the country. There's no rule that says TV should be divided between Disney and Westinghouse and GE and Murdoch. I mean, if the media were restructured in a pluralistic way, the good thing would be that right-wingers would be heard, left-wingers would be heard, besides corporate people being heard over and over. Gee, we might actually hear from labor leaders and
labor
rights advocates.
Trilateralism refers to the Trilateral Commission, which was organized in 1973 by David Rockefeller and many other people. And it basically has to do with the management of the entire globe, the management of the world economy, in the interest of global corporations and banks by the principal corporate powers at that time, which were the United States, Canada, Western Europe, and Japan.
Sort of a memory of Europe, and of course the main function of upper class aesthetics in America is just to tell most Americans that they're not good enough to be in it. You know, and if they are good enough to be in it, then it's subtracted from upper class aesthetics, you know, because, you know, and that's a tradition in America, to do the better than. You know, if you're good enough to be in here, then we'll have to move to an even better place. You know, it's like, if niggers can go to your public school, then you'll have to go to a private school. You know, if upper class niggers or Asians can come to your school, your private school, then we'll have to go to a special gated community school that's really expensive. So that tradition's in America too, but that's just only a small number of people. And, you know, Americans wouldn't be happy if they didn't have something to look up to.
Now, at this point, I could either ask you about the next strand, or I could ask you a supplementary question, which I'm now doing, about free will. I've just chosen to ask you about free will. Does that mean that the universe has just divided and there's another one going off its own separate way in which I haven't asked you about free will?
So, six, arch it to the hips. Seven, the legs are open. And eight, you close. We're coming up. Open the knees twice. There's the hips. There's your chest. The shoulders, elbow, wrist, and knuckles. One of the best things about popping, waving, and breaking is the freedom it lets you have to do what you want. So, break some rules. Use your imagination. Don't try to be like everyone else. You can even wear costumes.
There isn't a conspiracy. There are people who are used to treating the world as their labor force and market and everything else. They feel perfectly comfortable making decisions that affect thousands, tens of thousands, millions of people, that affect not just one country, but many countries. It's how they operate.
I saw them. Is that two gloves? Why would you say them? He's intelligent enough to come and lie to you. So, that picture, that photograph there, that seals their doom.
Is how would you describe that? It's as if they are observing their own behavior fully as much as the people who are observing them. And Gilmore is of that order. He's always observing his own behavior. He does something, if it doesn't work, he'll shift his personality over to another place. For a man of passions, he's singularly passionless in a way and calculating. Yeah.
One must realize what Buddha has said, that man's problem is his attachment to his senses and his thoughts, and only when he frees himself of this attachment is he able to free himself from the illusion. The illusion.
Your new dominion. You knew dominion when science and religion were tools of understanding and meaning, of conception and perception. See, science is not the culprit. Science is not bad. Modern technology is not bad. People like to pin it on technology, pin it on science. Unless you're a scientist, then you like to pin it on the superstitions, the mysticisms of the uninformed and uneducated. And your television and your movies show it very clearly. Where you have the scientists who are frustrated, pulling their hair out of the stupid idiocy of this community that won't realize that putting this substance in the water is going to kill them, and it's going to rot this and rot that, and not having proper this and proper that is going to destroy all of humanity. The poor scientist who is trying to convince a dumb, uninformed, redneck community brushing their teeth can be valuable. And then you have movies on the other side where the mad, terrible scientists know that this is going to destroy, but for the sake of science, etc., we must... And each side makes their movies, you know, trying to convince the other who's right. But we would suggest neither is wrong. Because, you see, there's always been science. There's always been science. Long before the Renaissance, that did not start science. Long before that, and there you're finding it archaeologically now, and are amazed. My gosh, look at this primitive society. They actually counted. They actually had a calendar. They actually made calculations and did things scientifically. They irrigated the land, can you believe it? These barbaric animals out of the slime. Science has been around longer than science will admit. It was not invented with the Renaissance. That's when science became science for its own sake, losing perspective of its purpose. But nonetheless, it's always been about, and religion also, in that large use of the word, we include mysticisms, metaphysics, magic, because that is, at that time, was the religion. And religion has been around a lot longer than religion wants to admit also. The Bible amorphously says, in the beginning, just to cover, yeah. But the beginning was about 1500 years BC. Oh, not of the creation of the earth, but of the Judeo-Christian ethic began 1500 years BC.
They're currently feeding this to the ground via the Mission Control Center in Kaliningrad. Discovery has started a slow ascent from the velocity vector.
Это комкодер, да? А вот хорошо видно сейчас было струю.
They got pissed off at the Egyptians for kicking him out. You won't let us play, we'll make our own field. Put together our own stadium. But nonetheless, religion has been around a lot, lot longer than that. And of course, you can see the struggle of science starting to develop and religion, in its organized sense, trying to crush it. Galileo and all that, everybody knows about him, and it was only in the 60s that they decided that he wasn't possessed of the devil and evil. 1960s, we're talking about. And then science reared up to crush religion. And then they made a pact called the Renaissance. We'll scratch your back if you scratch ours. And we'll both rise up and suppress the people. But you see, at one time, science was a tool of understanding and meaning. And religion was a tool of conception and perception. And that was a time of dominion. But what happened is that tool became a weapon. That tool became a weapon of a stunted and frustrated will and imagination, and an impotent ability to act and feel. And when science became a weapon, when people didn't have will and imagination, or they had it but it was stunted, and when they were impotent, unable to act, unable to feel, by their own choice, by their own decision, but nonetheless impotent, then religion and science became a tool, not a tool, rather a weapon, a club, to swing in vengeance
to take action when action was unable to be taken, to create feeling when people were too numb to feel, to exert will when they were too cowardly to do it themselves, to stimulate imagination when people refused to be imaginative.
It is very likely that there are some universes in which you asked me about a different strand and others in which you asked me about free will. It's not, however, a case of the universe dividing. What happened was that there were multiple copies of us already present. Some of them have developed in one way and some developed in a different way. So in the one in which I'm now saying this, you asked one question, but there are other universes in which you asked another question, and there are other universes in which we took a break and went for a cup of tea.
At any rate, I think we can never dismiss that the degree to which American men hate women. You know, it's very, very strong.
That is true macrocosmically. It is also true microcosmically.
Matter what prayer you use any prayer that you're comfortable with. It's an invitation for the angels to come to you.
Step 2, breathe, sit and relax. Breathe and become open. Do not meditate, but also do not activate. Just be of serene nature.
Breathing is such an important part of connecting with our angels. They come to us on our oxygen. And so when we breathe deeply, that helps them come within us, be with us, be around us. So I always suggest that people, when they say their prayer and ask the angels to be with them, to breathe very, very deeply, and it opens that communication.
When it was pushed out of you by the very society that you were trying to become a part of, your science, whether called biology or chemistry or earth science, whatever it was called, and your religion, by whatever name you gave it, even atheism as a religion, you began to use as a club, as a weapon. And that's when you lost dominion and chose domination instead.
I think that it is becoming part of the standard American worldview that the events that really count take place beyond our vision and without our understanding. And when you think that, then the silliest thing in the world to do is to get involved in an election campaign, go vote, take part in the political life of the community, the out front political life. Because in the back of your mind, there's always the assumption that at the end, if you start to get someplace, then the secret sphere will cut its powers into play. And you'll lose. Sometimes without even knowing that you're losing. Sometimes even while you imagine you're winning.
It's a tough beat, but somebody's got to do it.
We've got a hot one for you.
Let's look at the funk.
So rarely a very large number of universes, because it's not just us who are represented in all these different realizations.
It's us and all the subatomic particles in all their possible configurations. The total number of universes is not known, but it's certainly enormously larger than, for instance, the total number of atoms in one universe.
And finally, and fourthly, before the grand promise, the grand lie, you have dominion, and you knew dominion. Now the grand promise that is coordinated with the Industrial Revolution and the development of the technocracy has often been seen to source, because of the Industrial Revolution and that technocracy. And not so. Science is not to blame. The Industrial Revolution is not to blame. The technocracy is not to blame for the grand promise. The grand promise, the grand lie, comes from the collective ego that took advantage of the Industrial Revolution and the development of technocracy. Took advantage of that to trick you, to lie to you, to set you up, not unlike your ego, every day of the year. That takes advantage of situations to set you up, to lie to you, to trip you up. But before the grand promise, before the grand lie, there was the spiritual promise. It worked, it functioned. Not the religious promise, the spiritual promise. Because you see, the religious promise is part of the grand promise and is also a lie. But the spiritual promise that was there first, that was a time of dominion. And along comes the grand promise, and you drop the religious promise, grasp that grand one that is already a failure. You grasp it for dear life. And as it drags you down and down and down, you go willingly, holding on to it in the hopes that it'll pay off. It'll give what it says it'll give. The grand promise. Unlimited resources. Unlimited wealth. The greatest good for the greatest number. You can do anything you want to do. Which truly meant domination of nature, unlimited consumption, rampant competition.
This physical illusion being a creation of light emitted by our spark of a spirit that we are, trapped by electromagnetic fields, so the EM floating car or an anti-gravity machine / time machine just unlocks them. Very easy to do. Easier than the Macintosh to use, even. Thus considered impossible, because the two rules of America
The two rules of planet Earth, since this is America Earth now, are, if it works physically, it's real. And if it works physically, it's right. So we have all the laws of nature and all morality governed by, if it works physically. And that is the magic doorway through America / planet Earth into the new world of dominion I'm creating in my living room. Simple as that, and lots of fun, and can be very financially rewarding. You could do this in your own home. Many people are already doing so. You know, the new paradigm. You could read The Global Village, Marshall McLuhan. One of the later books with the good stuff in it that no one understands. About the infusion of the female god, the feminine force, which will be very valuable to men, not just women. Just prior to the EM floating car, however, will be various free energy machines causing an unbelievable revolution in geopolitical economics and science. As the laws of energy supersede the laws of Newton, as in the fig Newton, and Descartes, of course. Don't forget him. I think, therefore, I bend over.
To the optimal result,
I've got to get back to that living room pretty soon.
America.
Get to work.
Much, the degree to which America really was.
Hello, Mike out. ZBC, the House of Chaos.
On steroids.
We need a couple more players in the Celtics. Let's get to work.
I did them off and on for 7, 8, 9, 10 years, whatever the amount of years was.
With that big thought, let's go on to the next strand, which I think is computation. How on earth can you compute your way through such a multiverse?
Quite right. Well, that takes us directly to the idea of quantum computers. This is an idea that I've worked on for many years. The most important difference between quantum computers and existing computers is that quantum computers can harness the computational power of their counterparts in other universes. To put that in more traditional language, they can harness quantum interference effects to perform useful computations.
With the power of a quantum computer, it's possible, at least in theory, to compute things that would be totally impossible in our single universe. It's as if a quantum computer could tap into the computer power of the multiverse. And David Deutsch says that's exactly what will be happening when we succeed in making one. For his fourth strand, he turns to another biological concept, evolution.
The phenomenon of evolution is part of the creation of knowledge. It's linked on the one hand to this self-similarity that I spoke of in regard to knowledge, that the universe contains self-similarity, and on the other hand, it's linked to physics via the flow of time and parallel universes. The comment that I made before about our minds being the largest recognizable structures in the multiverse applies equally to evolved biological systems. The DNA sequence of a gene may look random when we look at a transcript of a gene, but if we were to look at that gene across parallel universes, we would see that it had a constant structure like a crystal across the multiverse, just like the contents of our mind do.
Your best insurance policy in the world.
If you wait until you feel deserving of having pleasant thoughts about your life, you will convince your subconscious that you're undeserving of happiness, and the result is you'll be unhappy.
And people cling, and have clung, have twisted it into the American dream, a phrase that has been used. And they, or whatever dream their nationality has. It sounds, in its initial state, it intimates freedom, but was intended to imprison. For that's exactly what it does.
And especially now that the tide is turning, more and more this is having to come out. I mean, pretty soon American women are going to have to, like, I don't know, I think they'll almost have to, like, climb into these robot machines where no part of a woman's body can be touched. Well, I guess cyber sex will take care of that. We'll have full body suits and things. So it's almost like, a real woman is so dangerous now that as a body politic, psychically, we've been creating various ways of hiding from it. Since when you think of American culture, it's only a masculine one. You know, women have no say psychically. So, it's not like there are various things happening and we have to adjust to them. Like there's AIDS, so we have to adjust to that by having sex with rubbers and prophylactics, or by just having vicarious non-touch sex, or various kinds of mediated sex, like phone sex or cyber sex or whatever. The view has always been, well, we're being impinged upon by our environment. You know, there's cosmic rays coming in, and we have to adjust, and life in the 20th century is hard, and, you know, all these various beliefs. No, the opposite is really true, that American culture, it's the man's last stand, dominating male principles, last stand to kill the feminine, you know, kill that bitch once and for all, man. And, so first we have AIDS, which, you know, was invented in the laboratory, you know, or alien tech interspace gone, you know, genetic mutation gone bad, whatever. I don't know the skinny on that one exactly, but it was man-made. And, it was made to kill, to discourage people from touching each other, you know, to touch the woman's body. And, of course, homosexuality is kind of like an adaptation. It's like, well, we'll figure out an intermediated way to touch a woman. So, it's almost like homosexuals are like the third gender. But That's not going to come out more until a little later. But right now, though, we have almost no touching of a woman's body anymore. You know, false breasts and false body parts, and disease, and then all the false aesthetic that we were talking about earlier of, you know, how men have no idea of any aesthetic relationship, you know, to anything feminine. And it's now that we have cyber activity, it's a perfect excuse to not have to even see a woman, you know, to not even have to see anything feminine. And yet we can have sex and climax and come and, you know, have denouement. And so none of that is because of limitations imposed from the outside. That's all because of, you know, this male hatred of feminine is like coming to a climax itself as consensus reality is, dissolves away and ends, you know, is dying.
Dr. Katz, can I ask you, are you an East Coast or a West Coast gangster?
Well, actually, I haven't really committed to either
one. Yeah. Get to it. God, Katz.
East Coast?
You know, it would be one thing if you, like, talked this way and, like, you said something important. But it's like you're like, shoelaces. What?
You know, Dave, we need to set some ground rules in here.
Come on, Katz, let me in! Katz, let me in!
Yeah, we're gonna have to stop now, Dave. Our time is up.
Oh, what a jib!
In 1865, the Klan was formed as a secret society. Their leader was called the Imperial Dragon, Grand Wizard, or the White Prince. Northeastern, Earl.
Grand Wizard.
Grand Wizard is correct. 10 points, your teammates are on the board first. Now, believe it or not, a Supreme Court justice had once been a member of the Ku Klux Klan. What was this justice's name? What was this justice's name? Byron Wright, Hugo Black, or Oliver Wendell Holmes? Northeastern, Don.
Hugo Black.
Hugo Black, correct, for another 10 points. And finally, this last one for you, Jim. In 1924, the Klan was defined as a group of patriots by what industrial innovator?
Henry Ford.
Henry Ford, absolutely correct, for another 10 points.
Holding on.
For example, redneck, which I did not know until I was working on the research.
Contemplate it. Relinquish your waste and return. Have the courage to speak. I just want to ruin your life. I don't want to go for it, but I want to pretend that I do, on and off, because I like the up and down of keeping you wondering whether or not I'm willing to be in this totally. Because I've got you by the balls, Christopher. And that's my only method of controlling you.
The development of vigilante justice.
Because at least this way, when you hurt me, I can hurt you twice as hard because I hold your immortality in my hands. By declaring, I'm here for you, and then stepping off the mountain, holding on to your testicles and dropping. Contemplate it. Relinquish your waist and return.
Tattoos on a person. Or why is he so skilled and so filled with spit?
Marijuana can have some unpleasant side effects. 2 days ago, the couple were arrested and fined for possession of marijuana while on vacation in Barbados. Today, they got back to London, and while Paul stopped to talk with reporters, Linda was busted again.
Can we get all this straight?
that whatever you think and whatever you think I've done, this, I'm telling you, this substance, cannabis, is a whole lot less harmful than rum punch, whiskey, nicotine, and glue, all of which are perfectly legal.
My name is Chris Riley. In 1993, I was working in Cambodia as a freelance photographer. After repeated visits to the Tuol Sleng Museum of Genocide with my friend Doug Niven, I was struck by the pictures that were on display. The Tuol Sleng Museum of Genocide is a museum that was set up on the site of a former prison run by the Khmer Rouge. The prison was known as S-21. And it was a place where people would be brought in, interrogated, forced to confess to crimes, and then eventually executed. A good friend of ours in Cambodia was working at the Tuol Sleng Museum, and she took us to the archive room, opened a drawer in this beat-up old file cabinet, and pulled out a negative. It was at that point that we realized, wow, these negatives do exist. For us, it was an incredible discovery. Not only a photographic discovery, but also a historical discovery, because these were primary documents of genocide. We can only theorize as to why the Khmer Rouge made these photographs at the prison.
You know, a favorite story of mine, I always remember one of the favorite stories.
Idea being that by creating the photograph and the dossier, which included the written confession, they created a record of traitors to the regime. During the Khmer Rouge years, if you were accused, that was enough to arrest you and execute you. There was no idea of a trial or of even your ability to prove your innocence.
Give me a little bit of the story. Remember one of the favorite stories, which puts me in mind of another story.
We don't know the exact number, but estimates now run as high as 20,000 for the number of people that were brought to S-21. All of these people were eventually executed. They were taken to the countryside, forced to dig their own graves, and beat over the back of the head with blunt instruments.
Было очень хорошо еще Сереж видно, когда он тоже подходил, и малые работы, откуда есть там вот эти носовые.
А, так лучше чуть-чуть отъехать.
Meanwhile, we're getting live pictures from inside the Mir space station. This is physician Dr. Valery Polyakov. He currently has the record for the most time spent on orbit by any human.
When the people were brought to the prison, taken into the photo studio, and their blindfold removed, the first thing that they were probably faced with was hot lights and a camera. The sense of terror that they would have felt is just unimaginable. But what we do know is that they knew this was going to be the end of the line.
It reminds me a little bit of the story. You know, a favorite story of mine. I always remember one of the favorite stories.
In one of the photographs, we see the inmate's number pinned to his chest. Perhaps it was used as a form of debasement, or perhaps the people taking the picture just did not care.
Repent. Turn yourselves from all of your transgressions.
transgressions, so iniquity shall not be your ruin. Cast away from you all your transgressions, whereby you have transgressed, and make you a new heart and a new spirit. For why will you die, O house of Israel?
The language used to talk about the prisoners was very dehumanizing. They were referred to as microbes, as traitors. The pronouns used to describe he and she were those used to describe male and female animals. So there was this sense that once you were brought to the prison, in addition to the sort of terror that you were going through, you were being referred to or thought of as nothing more than a piece of garbage or an animal.
But non-gene chemicals, that is, chemicals that haven't evolved, that were just random, including so-called junk DNA, although they look exactly the same in one universe, would not have this large crystalline structure across the multiverse.
We see women and children in these photographs because the Khmer Rouge felt that people were guilty by association. The entire family would frequently be arrested and everybody executed.
I don't understand what's going on.
Yeah. But intensity comes to him in prison too, and a sort of coherence in the letters, these letters which by any standards are remarkable letters that he writes to Nicole in a fury of feeling dispossessed and possessing her and confessing and reclaiming. And
I think some of the greatest letters of jealousy I've ever read, that is, never is jealousy expressed so nakedly as in those letters.
The media moved in very heavily on Gilmore. Did it change him? Do you think it changed him? Do you discover a different Gilmore after... I mean, when he was sentenced to death, there were less than 20 people in the court, and so there we were, as he said. And he'd killed two men in cold blood, murdered two men in cold blood. But there were less than 20 people in court, Deseret News, that was it. Then he was going to be shot, and he insisted on being shot, and it's boom, isn't it? It's Playboy interviews, it's... Can various television stations get that camera there? It's fighting for the rights. It's auctioning this. It's now. Did Gilmore change in that process? Was he waiting for that? What did that do to him?
Well, it changed him. And he, there was a challenge implicit in it. And I think whenever the media attaches themselves to anyone, the challenge implicit in it is: do you not collapse? After all, even presidential candidates have collapsed under the pressure of facing the media constantly.
We can only speculate that when faced with such a horrible realization that they reacted in all kinds of different ways, including some that almost seemed to be laughter, as if a madness had set in.
That creates suffering. This higher place inside one is but a thin veil away. Most people do not know of it. Of those who know of it, few ever attempt to find it. Of those few who attempt to find it, few of them ever succeed. And yet it is possible for an individual consciousness to enter into realms where one is now free of a specific location in time and space. Of those who know of it, few ever attempt to find it. Of those few who attempt to find it, few of them ever succeed. And yet it is possible for an individual like you or like me, a method by a discipline that is imposed upon oneself, to alter one's own consciousness to enter into realms where one is now free of specific location in time and space. A specific location in time and space.
In a number of these pictures, you see a blackness creeping in or washing around the prisoners. This is caused by damage to the negatives. We felt this was actually a compelling quality because in one way it speaks metaphorically about the damage, the destruction, and the death that these people face.
Ram Tirth, a realized being in India, said of this place in describing who one is when one gets to this place, "I am without form, without limit, beyond space, beyond time. I am in everything. Everything is in me." What could it mean to be free of a time and space locus?
Yes, sir. As the sun came up, they were in the maneuver, of course, and they're firing jets. We're firing jets. Their arrays are moving. It's a beautiful sight. It's a great world.
So you've got four strands, really all linked together in the multiverse.
Yes, it's perhaps only because I'm a theoretical physicist that I regard the quantum physics strand as the first among equals. Certainly my worldview is primarily via quantum physics. Of course, it could be that the real fabric of reality has more strands. All I'm claiming for these four strands is that they represent a unification into a single worldview of everything that we currently understand at a deep level. Now, it could be that there are whole strands of reality that we do not yet understand. In fact, that's likely. And in which case they will either one day take their place as new strands, or they will turn out to be explicable from what we already know.
But one way or another, there is a theory of everything.
It's not the reductionist theory of everything that particle physicists are working towards. It is, and nor is it a theory of everything there is. It's a theory of everything that we understand. What has happened here is that all the different pieces of knowledge that we understand can fit together into a unified whole. In fact, must, if we are to understand them properly.
I've never actually killed anybody before, murdered another person, snuffed out another human being. In a way, oddly enough, I wish I could talk to my father about this, since he did have the experience, had what we in the corporate world call the background in that area of expertise, he having been an infantryman in the Second World War, having seen action in the final march across France into Germany in 44-45, having shot at and certainly wounded and more than likely killed any number of men in dark gray wool, and having been quite calm about it all in retrospect. How do you know beforehand that you can do it? That's the question. Well, of course, I couldn't ask my father that, discuss it with him, not even if he were still alive, which he isn't, the cigarettes and the lung cancer having caught up with him in his 63rd year, putting him down as surely, if not as efficiently, as if he had been a distant enemy in dark gray wool. The question, in any case, will answer itself, won't it? I mean, this is the sticking point. Either I can do it or I can't. If I can't, then all the preparation, all the planning, the files I've maintained, the expense I've put myself to when God knows I can't afford it, have been in vain. And I might as well throw it all away, run no more ads, do no more scheming, simply allow myself to fall back into the herd of steer mindlessly lurching toward the big dark barn where the mooing stops. This has to work. I have to get out of this morass and soon, which means I'd better be capable of murder.
Person 1,000, 10,000 miles away, you can, with just the gestibility, make an individual sick, let alone calling down a cone of power and using imitative and sympathetic magic.
Distance is not an object.
Distance has never been an object, no. The only limitation is the practitioner's.
Favorite story of mine. I always remember one of the favorite stories.
you like that scene? Great cum shot. Where do you see this scene? Famous actresses, my Hawaiian picture, my bed.
Pictures?
Yes, have a seat. There's something I want to tell you. Come on.
Oh, tell us.
Just have a seat for us. I have this wild, wild fantasy that I have never did before. And I know that you guys are like best friends, but this is like something I've never did, and I'm just hoping that maybe you might want to try it. Okay, it's wild fantasy. I know you've never done something like this either. I've never done it. So it's broke both ways. I want to try to do a DP. I have sex both of you guys at the same time.
Okay.
I've never tried it though, you know, like both at the same time. I mean not one at a time, I mean at the same time. Okay?
Same time.
Okay, let's play a game. You take your shoe off, you take your shirt off, and I'll take my skirt off. Yep. One piece at a time.
Cool.
Now you have to take another piece off for me to take one off. Oh boy, what does that mean? Okay, I'll take my top off.
I'm out of clothing.
Sure. I only have two pieces left, so something's gotta go.
Two pieces.
Sure, okay, bra.
Oh yeah.
Well, there's one more piece, panties. Oh, I guess those will have to go then. For these to go.
Is this good?
I guess the panties have to go off, huh? Oh, boy.
But there is going to have to be a surgical work of the Holy Spirit that can only take place as America bow on its knees and turn to the living God and cast away their iniquity. God said, you will die, but you shall live.
lacking you need. So desperate. People are in the United States of America. Never has a government in the history of this nation gone so far away from God. In 3 decades, never has a Supreme Court taken one of the most powerful forces our forefathers, 4 times in the Constitution, the name of God is mentioned. And they don't even want our children to meditate because they might think about God. In a world where the Soviet Union is looking for preachers and preachables, our kids won't even take them into public school. But we can have homosexual, lesbian meetings on public property. Oh, God.
Yeah.
Before it's too late.
Thank you.
embodies the environment in which you dwell. It's often referred to as the temple within which one does one's inner work.
That grand promise, there was dominion.
Aspect of our work.
Macrocosmically and microcosmically. Microcosmically, it doesn't come quite so grand, but it's there. You go to school, and the books, and the teachers, the administrators, and the parents, and the television, and everybody tells you, or radio, or whatever before radio, even, tells you. You go through this system and you will be dominant. You will have power over other people because you will have an education and a degree. Many degrees. And you will have then unlimited wealth. Become a doctor. All doctors are rich. Become a lawyer. All lawyers are rich. Become a scientist. All scientists are rich. Become a movie star. All movie stars are rich. And it'll be the greatest good for the greatest number if you cooperate. Become normal. Become bland. Give up any of your uniqueness. Give up any of your idiosyncrasies. Give up any of your delightful personality differences and become a little sheep. And don't bother to teach her. Don't act up in class. Don't ask questions that she doesn't like to hear or he doesn't want to hear. Don't do anything original in your work. It makes it too hard to assess whether it's good or not. Do what has always been done before. Do better yet what I did. Write the paper I'd write. Answer the questions the way that I'd answer them. Have the opinions I have. It's much easier for me. Greatest good for the greatest number. We'll get along if you do everything I tell you, exactly as I tell you to. One after the other, for 12, for 16 years. And you come out empty. And that's not just an opinion. That's been proven quite clearly, scientifically. But as you enter the system, the level of creativity is very high. As you exit the system, it is virtually non-existent. Productivity and creativity reduce from somewhere to 60 to 70% down to 2%. Meaning, as you go in, 60 to 70% of those entering education are highly creative and productive, and only 2% come out that way. They retained it. It's not that they were part of the ones that didn't have it and got it. It was there, and dwindled and whittled and removed until finally they had to let you go. However, if they had known, and often it is that 2%, then it is courage to go on. Past college, post-graduate school. Yes, I know you have all the degrees, but you ought to hang around a little longer and learn a little more. Take that 2%, run them through for another 5 years. We're bound to get it down to 1% and maybe even nothing. The grand promise. That if you behave, don't scribble on your papers, don't write notes to the people next to you when the teacher's talking. If you do that, you'll grow up to be happy, successful, rich, abundant with children. An RV, a swimming pool, and weeds in your garden. How not carving your initials in the top of your desk is going to make you a tremendously successful business person, we've yet to figure out. But at age 7, when you're told that, you believe it, and it was a lie. That's when you've had dominion before then. And you've known it in this lifetime, and you've known it in others, and therefore it is a part of you. It is a part of you. And if you can get back in touch with that, get back in touch with that and see where you gave it up, in the broad macrocosmic sense and the microcosmic sense, then you've taken the first step to establishing and understanding why you want to make the choice for dominion. The second approach deals with the grand promise itself. We have talked of it on numerous occasions. We'll review it very quickly. The grand promise is basically, as we've already even this afternoon suggested, that there is unlimited natural resources. You see, with the Industrial Revolution and the development of that whole approach of industry, that level of productivity, that ability to mass produce Out of that, using that phenomena, the collective ego and the personal ego, negatively, said, there are unlimited natural resources. There are unlimited natural resources. Therefore, you have a right to dominate those resources, to use them any way you want, without any thought, without any thinking, without any consideration. Just use it. It's there. You are in charge. You dominate. Man has elevated himself to that position, to have the right to dominate the natural resources. Also suggested that with that comes out the thought that this means as unlimited abundance, unlimited wealth. If this machine can produce 50 items in one day, where it used to take 1,000 people to do that, just think, three machines can, 5 machines, 100 machines, 1,000 machines, there's unlimited amount.
Remember what you wrote after you wrote it. It always seems fresh.
Yes, just the sense of knowing that what you have received is correct, and there is a place of inner knowing that lies within each of us. Just allow that to flow through.
Mercedes-Benz can produce enough cars so that everybody can have a Mercedes, if indeed they were around at the Industrial Revolution. That would have been the philosophy. Therefore, it's there. Unlimited. Which really meant unlimited consumption. Use up. There's always more. And then the greatest good for the greatest number. You know, in the history of the world, the majority has never been correct. Do you know that? There's never been a time that the majority has been correct. The greatest good for the greatest number. Meaning, find the balance. You can't have this so that you can. That now is called communism. That is part of the grand promise. In your Western capitalistic imperialistic world, yes, that give up so that more can have. Become normal, become mediocre, everybody become the same. Except those fringes, and then we don't care about them. The greatest good for the greatest number. And that you can do anything you want to do. Anything at all. Which is the promise. But you see, the promise is a lie. It never was true. Never, ever was it true. It's always been a lie. It was intended as a lie. But people bought it. You bought it. Hook, line, and sinker, and have gone down with it. Because you see, what happens is the ego, collectively, creates the promise, and the ego, individually, bites it. Hooks onto it. Wants it. Believes it. Hangs on for dear life. And when the promise fails, which it always does, you would rather hold on to the fact that the promise was true. You weren't. The promise didn't fail. I failed. Humanity failed. I will protect the promise of my ego and destroy myself instead.
This form of yoga, which when it is done properly is also a form of prayer, is called Hatha Yoga. And it involves getting in and out of a set of asanas, or body positions.
Nobody would do that. Yes. You've done it. in other lifetimes and already in this one. Because you see, when you realize, when you come to the fact that resources are not unlimited, rather than saying the promise lied, you say no. It is because of self-destructiveness and stupidity. And therefore humanity becomes self-destructive and stupid.
These ultimately allow a person to become sensitized to certain nerves in his body with which he must work in other parts of yoga, as well as making it possible to sit in cross-legged fashion for long periods of meditation.
That's the nature of humankind. They're self-destructive and stupid. When there isn't this greatest wealth, this unlimited consumption, rather than say the lie, admit the lie, you would rather say no. It is unlimited consumption, except for the greediness and the hostility. And humanity becomes greedy and hostile.
Without being distracted by the tensions within his body. Another part of Hatha Yoga concerns control of the breath, called pranayama. The utilization of energy within the body is crucial in higher forms of yoga.
I would rather believe that it is the inherent nature of man and woman, that they are greedy and hostile. That's why everybody doesn't have everything. And when indeed the happiness was neither the greatest nor for the greatest number at all, rather than admit that doesn't work, that's not true, you'd rather say no, it's because of them, the elite.
Techniques of control of energy through control of the breath are an important part of the discipline. These breathing exercises finally allow one to move energy from the lower parts of the body, where it is used for external action, digestion, and reproduction, up the spine into the head, where it can be utilized to achieve higher states of consciousness.
Those that think they're better than me, like I think I'm better than them. And society and mankind becomes elitist, separatist, alien from each other, alienated from each other. And when you realize you can't do anything you want to do, you don't say, that promise was a goddamn lie. You say, I'm undeserving. I'm unloving. And that humanity becomes undeserving and unloving. And the promise supports that and says, yes, humanity is self-destructive, stupid, greedy, hostile, elitist, better than, undeserving and unloving. That's the nature of the human condition. And that's a lie.